Good day, Internet.
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 Let's get into some tech news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
That doesn't violate the intellectual property protections over the phrase in which I am mocking, does it?
I don't think so.
I think it would be kind of a satire, Tom.
Okay.
Yeah.
If only Judge Rehnquist was still with us. Here we go. In 3, 2... This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you, the listener. Thanks to every single one of you, including Kelly Cook, Scott Hepburn, Bjorn Andre, and our new patrons helping us to get to our patron goal, Michelle, Scott, Wauga, and Mark. On this episode of Daily Tech News Show, the metaverse may have started in Indonesia. They got real-life metahumans down there. Plus, EA makes moves away from being a video game company. This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, June 21st, 2023 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio 7 Lamps, I'm Sarah Lane.
From Salt Lake City, I'm Scott Johnson.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chen.
Let's get right into the quick hits.
As part of the continuing protests around Reddit's API pricing changes, some subreddit moderators have switched their communities to NSFW, aka not safe for work. This means that Reddit doesn't display ads on these communities. Now, as a result, Reddit started suspending some of these mods, with spokesperson Tim Rothschmidt saying, "Moderators incorrectly marking a community as NSFW is a violation of both our content policy and moderator code of conduct." Mods for the mildly interesting subreddit report that their team has been subsequently reinstated.
Maybe they posted some not safe for work content. Like, no, see, it's correct. Look at
it's
these
mildly
butts.
Interesting.
Yeah. ByteDance-owned TikTok is testing a new shopping feature in the UK called Trendy Beat, offering a selection of items that are popular in TikTok videos. The Financial Times reports these items are sold by another ByteDance-owned company, with ByteDance reportedly taking all the revenue from the sales, but keeps it all in the family. This is different from TikTok Shop, which you may have come across. That allows third parties to sell items, with TikTok taking a commission on the sales. TikTok Shop has proven popular in some Southeast Asian markets, but has not proved popular in the UK. So maybe Trendy Beat is a way to be like, well, what if we sold just stuff in a different way. Shopping on social media is popular. Yonhap News reports that YouTube is going to launch a shopping channel of its own in South Korea on June 30th, and that will offer live streamed shopping content with 30 brands signed up to go with it at launch.
Discord group product manager Derek Yang announced the platform plans to experiment with letting servers sell digital products as one-time purchases over the coming months. So these products will be available in a new server shop section. The company is also updating its server subscription options, providing tier templates to make it easier to initially set up some support levels.
Apple added support for passkeys to the betas of iOS 17, iPadOS 17, and macOS Sonoma. So if you're running the beta, you can use passkeys now to sign into any account linked to an Apple ID. And that includes your third-party Apple ID sign-ins, if you're using the Apple ID to sign into a third-party site. So it doesn't have to be an Apple-owned service. But you do have to be using an Apple device. This is not going to work on your Windows machine, even if you're logging into something with an Apple ID. The Verge's Wes Davis, though, expects that support across devices would happen once the feature is fully released.
DP Review fans rejoice. Hopefully, publisher Gear Patrol announced it is saving, by way of acquiring DP Review, around 3 months after the camera review site announced it was being shut down by Amazon. Amazon acquired DP Review back in 2007.
So wait, why the hopefully? Are you doubtful that Gear Patrol is going to keep its word?
I'm just saying, I know there are a lot of fans of DP Review saying, yay, yeah, it does not die after all. So let's hope it thrives, yeah, and it's under its new ownership.
Indeed. All right. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission filed a lawsuit against Amazon, alleging the company violated rules by using so-called dark patterns. dark patterns? Is that practice of kind of trying to trick you into answering a same way because you're not paying close attention? Like you designed the page to make the yes button bright blue with big letters and the no button's kind of gray and small letters, so you're not going to pay attention to it as easily. But the main complaints of the FTC lawsuit are that non-Prime subscribers saw multiple buttons for checkout. That would be where the dark patterns played in, making it hard to see which one would not subscribe them to Prime. In other words, there was one they had to pay close attention to not accidentally sign up for Prime. Also, once they were tricked into signing up for Prime, cancellation was too complicated, according to the FTC, making customers go through unnecessary steps. Amazon allegedly calls the prices Iliad internally, at least according to this lawsuit. Iliad is a reference to the work by Homer about the Trojan War. I would have thought Odyssey would have been a better Homeric reference there because, you know, big long, making people on a big long travel, but Iliad apparently is what they used. The FTC is looking for a court order to force Amazon to change its practices and provide refunds to affected customers. We all agree dark patterns suck, but Scott, should they be against the law?
Oh, that's a big jump, isn't it? Going from they're terrible to we should ban them in legal ways. But I don't know. I worked for a company for a while and was in some meetings that felt downright devious because those meetings were all about how do we make it hard for people to cancel our service. And it was a web service. This is like 2004, 05, so it was early. But it was still this feeling of like, we're going to make it really easy for them to sign up and almost impossible for them to figure out how to get out of here. And worst case is they'll have to email us finally, and then we'll be forced to get them out. But then we'll still ask them questions. So this thinking, I think, is still pervasive. And obviously it exists in big, huge companies like Amazon all the way down to small, smaller services and sites. In terms of the question, though, should it be illegal? I'm kind of tempted. If you'd asked me 10 years ago, I said, nah, it's fine. You know, we're all adults here. We can figure it out. I'm starting to think maybe there ought to be, at the very least, some regulations that people have to adhere to or they get fined. And I guess that would, you know, that would bring in legal status. So, I'm going to answer the question. Yes, I think to make them suck less, people shouldn't be allowed to do them, especially when there's money involved. There's no money involved. It's just like a dumb thing where you sign up to have an avatar made or whatever it is. Fine, whatever. But if you've got monetary transaction going on and people are making it difficult for you to get out and are using skeevy methods to get you in, we probably ought to have some guidelines.
Well, the thing about Prime too is I've been an Amazon Prime member for, I can't even tell you how long. It's been not since the beginning of Amazon, certainly, but we're going on a decade. The price has crawled up over the years. It's $140 a year. It used to be $99. You know, and each time it goes up, you know, $10 or so, I go, well, but it makes sense to me because I use Prime a lot. And over the course of any given year, I am saving money. But if I didn't use Amazon the way that I do use it, then that could be a little much, especially if I was like, you know, I'm not using it. And so this doesn't make sense for me. I'm going to go ahead and cancel. Now, I've never tried to cancel Prime since I signed up for it. So I'm not a great person to ask about how hard this is. However, there are definitely times where I'm going to buy a product and I'm seeing like, here's the Prime button to get it, you know, when 2 days shipping or that sort of thing, you know, or here's the, you know, the Prime way to get it in fewer boxes, you know, save the planet while you're doing this type thing. Or here's another option to do it another way. Now, as a non-Prime subscriber, if you're seeing all those same options and you're kind of like, I really just need toilet paper, you know, whatever it is, I can see where this could be confusing. I don't think Amazon is going out of their way to be like, hey, here are the differences between your account that is non-Prime and a Prime account, which could benefit you going forward. So that's, I think, where, you know, a lot of this stuff comes in.
Stoic Squirrel just said in our chat room, I'm not one to defend Amazon, but when I canceled Prime, it was easy. So I think that it's bad policy to try to define a business practice in a law. So trying to define dark patterns in a way that people won't be able to get around them sounds like a recipe for ineffective legislation. What I support is something that they've done in Europe. I believe they've done it in the UK. It may or may not have become an actual law, but I know it was in the draft, which is if you sign up for a thing away, you have to provide cancellation in the same way. So if it's one click to sign up for the thing, it should be one click to get rid of it. For example, in Europe, they required Amazon to make Prime cancelable in two clicks. If I call to subscribe, I should call to unsubscribe. But if I sign up online, I shouldn't have to call to unsubscribe. And again, Amazon isn't making you call. They're not going that far. But that's where I would go with the rules and the laws. When you start trying to say like, well, your dark pattern is too confusing, it becomes a fight over like, well, but what if we did two buttons? And what if we did this shade of yellow? And yeah. I'm not sure that that's the most effective way to approach
there's it. There's a lot that can do in two clicks too. I was just thinking about my exit from Adobe. I finally am not paying for any Adobe services after years and years and years of doing it. And they really just gave me one page when I said, I want to cancel. And the page said, hey, if you stick around, we'll give you this deal for so many months. Do you want to do that? And that was on the same page as it saying, no, I'm still canceling and I can hit that button right below it. I don't mind that, right? I don't feel like I'm being misdirected. I don't feel like I'm being tricked. I'm
just
being told,
hey. Of course, the company wants to retain your
Sure. And they probably have numbers, Sarah, that say, this many people have been retained because we did this.
Do you know how long I kept paying for Acrobat for this exact reason? Where I was like, oh, well, that was good. Thank you for the kickback. I guess I'll stick around for another 4 months.
Sure, sure. I don't want to take that
away. And for anybody who's sort of like dark patterns, I don't know. Have I ever seen something like this? Anytime you get an email and it's like, oh, I don't want this. I want to unsubscribe. Sometimes that's pretty easy to see. Sometimes it's like in a weird font. Or it's barely legible, or it seems to not appear at all. You know, it's all sort of the same thing. It's a company saying, okay, we're providing the service, but we don't want you to do it. So
look for an unsubscribe in an email. That'll help you understand dark patterns. So at least the first step. Well, what do we got next, Sarah?
Well, Tom, I'm glad you asked. Electronic Arts CEO Andrew Wilson announced that the company will restructure its studios, as far as naming goes anyway, citing an effort to empower our creative teams. So this includes splitting up EA Sports and EA Games into separate units, with the latter, EA Games, renamed to EA Entertainment. This will see COO, Chief Operating Officer, Laura Meal, as president of EA Entertainment, and Cam Weber remaining the head of EA Sports. Now, Scott, EA renaming Games to Entertainment sort of sounds like EA's got plans to expand. Where do you think that might go?
Well, it's an interesting question, right? I have my own feelings about why sports should be separate and maybe should have been separate for years, given the business that represents, because it's a very complicated, license-based thing, and you're always, you know, negotiating for a better deal from the NFL for this year, and are we going to continue getting the Madden license or not, and all this sort of stuff. Aside from that, though, maybe this is an opportunity for them on the quote-unquote now games side, or what was game side, now entertainment side, to do more with their IPs. They have a number of them that are popular and that have been around for a long time. Mass Effect, Dead Space, the list goes on, and they also do some Star Wars games. They no longer have exclusivity on that. But maybe this is a chance for them to say, we want to make a deal with Hulu and make a Dead Space series. It'll be a horror anthology series, and we're really excited about it. It'll be part of our EA Entertainment brand. Games will still come out of there, but they'll be closely associated with these other projects. Like the way I'm saying it is the kind of spin I could expect. And I don't mean that to say that it's just spin. It very well could be a great way for them to branch out. But they haven't really done any of this up till now. There hasn't been, in the way that you see from other IP holders. You see more of this sort of stuff from Konami and Riot Games with their recent success with Arcane and various others. The new Mario movie is an example of a big one from Nintendo after being kind of quiet on that front for a while. So I do think there's a desire from gaming juggernauts out there, EA being one of them, whether we like it or not, who want to do more of this and end up with more hands in more cookie jars. And those cookie jars are other kinds and forms of entertainment that they're not necessarily suited to do internally, by the way. They're not going to make their own Dead Space television show. They will likely sub that out, like Nintendo did with Imagine Entertainment, or like Konami did with Castlevania and whoever they worked with. They don't do these things internally, but they do a lot more of this now. And I think
this is an opportunity for them to do
Hold on, Scott. I'm on the phone with 5 year ago Scott Johnson, who's telling me, well, Netflix isn't going to make games. They're just going to license their properties to games.
Oh, I remember that Scott Johnson.
Do you think there's a possibility that, yes, not today, no, they're absolutely not going to make TV shows, but is this laying the groundwork of like, well, future streaming, maybe we need to keep that door open?
Entirely possible, I suppose. The problem with doing your own homegrown entertainment, you know, like Blizzard Entertainment is known for having the best internal animation cinematic studio in the business. Like, there's no question. And most other companies, they sub out this stuff to companies that are suited more to that full time. But Blizzard has their own, so they kind of farm their own stuff internally. But they've never turned around and made a television show out of it or even a one-off film out of it. It's all aimed toward the games. So I'm not saying they're not doing that because it's hard. I just think they're not doing it because it's a separate business. And so this could be them saying, well, by branching out this way, now we have a separate business, kind of.
Yep.
The problem is they're not splitting games from that. This isn't a whole new third leg. This is still part of the second leg, sports being part of the first leg. So it doesn't sound like that's what they're ready to do. But I, you know, tell Scott 5 years ago, A, quit eating fat food. And secondly, he might be wrong about this.
Who knows? He said quit eating the fat food. Sorry. Yeah.
All right. Too late. Wayne, it didn't change immediately, so it must not have worked.
It didn't work. That was bad reception. Right, folks, we have fewer than 400 patrons to go to reach our goal. We're at 399. We can do it. We want to have 4,000 paid patrons by next Thursday. You can help us make that happen. And if we get there, Molly Wood has committed to being on the show the next day, June 30th, and once a month on Friday from then on. So help us make Molly Fridays happen. Patreon.com/DTNS. The metaverse may have arrived, but it's in Southeast Asia, and it's out in the world, not in a headset. Restofworld.org reports the first example. We've got multiple examples, but the first example, Indonesia's TV1, biggest broadcast channel in the country, or at least one of the biggest, has been using a digital reporter called Nadira, based on human news anchor Fahada Indi. Indy still provides the voice, but the machine model provides the visuals and the movements, as well as translations, here's the key, into British and American accented English, so two different accents, Chinese, and many local dialects, of which Indonesia has many, including Javanese and Sundanese. There are two other avatars, too. Sasya is an imposing-looking Chinese Indonesian avatar, and Bumi is a curly-haired Eastern Indonesian.
This is fascinating to me, and Indonesia being where this is, taking place and seems to be thriving, of particular interest because a lot of people live in Indonesia, a series of islands, lots of different dialects, and the idea that I don't know, how popular Fahada Indi is, but let's just say pretty popular, right? News anchor, people like her. People like her voice. People like her to give the news. Not everybody in Indonesia is going to want the news or be able to even absorb the news translated in one way. A human trying to figure out how to deliver news with a population of folks who are, in the hundreds of, dialects, that would be an impossible task. So you'd have to leave a lot of people out for this to be able to reach more people. And as far as I know, this is something that Indonesia's been experimenting with in a variety of ways. Airports, for example, certain banks, that kind of thing. That makes a lot of sense. And it doesn't, this is a situation where I can't possibly say, you're putting people out of jobs. In a way, you're being able to keep somebody in a job to be able to reach more folks.
Yeah, it's interesting that this is in Indonesia, isn't it? The immigration office at the airport, as you just mentioned, has four virtual spokespeople. And like you said, there's a bank. There's an Indonesian folk singer who's virtual with real life endorsement deals. Why so popular in Indonesia in particular? I know Indonesia is a center of tech startups and tech life, and they've tried to position themselves as a great place for companies to pivot to as they start to try to find new areas of the world to diversify supply chains and that. Maybe that's why, because there's just a culture of trying things. I don't know.
It feels like this is where this stuff will often start as we move forward into these metaverse-like things or AI-driven things. And the reason I think that is mainly I'm criticizing ourselves. I think we're a little hesitant to do this. I think we're hesitant to see an avatar on the nightly news.
When you say we, you mean the U.S.
Americans. I'd say the Americans. I think we look at, you know.
There's some truth to that.
Yeah. We look at some avatar on the nightly news telling us what's going on or what we should be hearing about or thinking. And I think we balk at that. And I think that can change, like a lot of things have. But I don't think it's going to come within. We're going to get super stoked here in pockets about it. We're going to get really excited about what it could mean. But as a mainstream acceptable method of disseminating news in multiple accents, markets, languages, I think we're going to be slow to embrace it the way that other markets could. And by them embracing it, I think that will help us get around to it. I hate that we're slow with this stuff because actually I'm kind of a fan of this aspect of the metaverse. I think it's cool.
Respectfully, US isn't the only market. Why isn't this happening in Europe? Why isn't it happening in India? Why isn't it happening in South Korea, Japan?
Same problem to some degree, right? Like we're all a little slow to do it. I would even argue Indonesia's just slow to do it. They're just going to be the first one. They're going to be the least slow to do it. Maybe. I don't know that it will catch on like wildfire either, and it may take time to suss out what people actually really want. Personally, I'm stoked about it. I think about, you know, a game like Mass Effect where I walk into a space and a holographic robot lady tells me everything I need to know, and I tell her where I need to go and what I need to do, and there's interactivity there and more beyond just consuming what she's saying. I can ask questions and get all I need. I'm for this future. I'm stoked about it. But
I am too.
I don't know. A lot of people want to sit down and watch, you know, NBC Nightly News with a fake dude yet.
Yeah, but at the same time, okay. So I was thinking about this earlier. It's like, okay, so let's say I call my bank and I've got to go through some phone tree thing, right? You know, I live in California, so there's, you know, a lot of Spanish that's spoken in California is as well as English. You know, so there's always like, you know, if you want the rest in Spanish, you know, press 2 type thing. So it's like, I'm used to this in some respects, but yes, if I'm watching my nightly news, you know, and Tom Brokaw is telling me what's going on and I'm like, yeah, well, but I don't speak English. So I would like Tom Brokaw, you know, trusted name of news, to be able to speak to me in a way that feels a little bit more seamless, a little bit more like I'm being heard, I'm being reached. I think that is an awesome thing. Now, I know we're, you know, the U.S. is, you know, we can be pretty insular about a lot of things, you know, and I live here. So, you know, I feel like I can say that only speaking for myself, but, you know, some of you as well. A country like Indonesia, I think, is so much more of a melting pot of culture, of language, of, you know, you are pretty close to going to lots of other countries just geographically. You know, the official language, which is based on Malay, I was reading up about this morning because it's very fascinating, is actually not the most spoken language, just the official language. So when you have all that stuff, plus a country of, you know, 200 plus million people in a relatively small space, I think it's fascinating that this is happening and it's also working.
And that makes me think that India would be the next on the docket.
Absolutely.
For something like this, right?
100%.
Because same thing, huge population with a large number of languages. And I, you know what, if you're in the audience in India right now and you're like, oh no, we already have it, please send us an email, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com.
Well, I don't know how hungry everybody is after this conversation about the metaverse being a real thing, but I am. So I would like to let you know that you can drop a pin and get a pizza. That is, if you like Domino's pizza, because the company announced pinpoint delivery. This is designed to be able to get a pizza delivered to a specific location, but not necessarily a specific address. You might not be home. You might be at the beach. Maybe you're having a picnic in the park. Maybe you're on a street corner. I don't care. you might just want to eat some pizza. So Domino's is using Google Maps in its mobile app, its own mobile app, to receive your order. You drop a pin, then you can trap your trap your driver and also track your driver's GPS location. And then you can get text updates and arrival times about, you know, when they're arriving. Now, if you're saying this is magical, there are some restrictions. You can't like have the driver wade out into the ocean and give you a pizza type
hey,
of thing.
Hey, get a speedboat, driver. Come on.
It needs to be a reasonable and safe spot for a driver to pull over. And then you only have 4 minutes to meet them. So if you're giving them, you know, a little bit of a curveball, just know that it might not work out. But hey, if you want to play, pizza is pizza.
We are preparing for a trip in the end of August, beginning of September. And we've been watching these videos about picnicking by the Han River in Seoul. One of the things that is normal there is to get delivery. Like you go rent your picnic equipment, you go to the convenience store, get your drinks, and then you order like fried chicken or something to be delivered. And there's like a space dedicated for delivery people that you have to go meet. This turns that into anywhere in the world. Well, anywhere Domino's is operating, I guess, for pizza. Like it doesn't have to be a specific area that has been set up and organized. You can just have your pizza, whatever park, beach, wherever you are. I think that's pretty
cool. Exactly. Yeah, no. And Domino's is quick to say in its announcement, it's like, listen, if you're backpacking in some backcountry area that Domino's would never deliver to, like, don't expect somebody to like magically find you. Like they're not gonna like, you know, like
parachute drop down.
You know, it's not
rappel
that's not
into
happen.
A ravine. Yeah.
But yeah, yet. Like you might just be like, well, I'm not home, but I'm not at a friend's house either. We're kind of in transit, and wouldn't that be fun? This is another option, and Domino's, you know, got to give them kudos to.
That's what the drones are for. Eventually, the drone delivered pizza will be able to use this to go anywhere. We're just not there yet. That's all.
Exactly.
All right, let's check out the mailbag.
Let's do it. We got some really good feedback on our Fediverse conversation from Tuesday's show with Patrick Norton. Doug wrote in saying Meta joining the Fediverse is in a big way and stays there long enough to have some traction. If they then decide to block some other Mastodon operators, though, they have outsized impact in terms of the number of users that removes them from the site. And because of human inertia, that means that most of those users won't quickly switch over. Doug says open systems are good. What are better are open systems with rough operational parity in terms of size and impact. Katie wrote in with a somewhat similar sentiment. She wrote into our Patreon saying, I think my main concern with Meta and the Fediverse is that the Fediverse was some place that a lot of marginalized people sought out to be a safe haven from places like Twitter and Facebook. The other concern I have is the ability of a company like Meta to have a greater influence on protocols like ActivityPub to change them to be more Facebook Meta friendly.
Yeah, these are both great points. What I would say to Doug and Katie is, you know, the hope is that the open protocol is designed to prevent the abuses that Doug and Katie are worried about. Katie's point about Meta getting influence over the ActivityPub protocol is another spin on that. But again, if you have a properly functioning, properly governed set of rules for ActivityPub, they shouldn't be able to have undue influence for them. All these concerns are totally valid, though. And thanks to Katie and Doug for sharing them with us. Tom, a.k.a. Kaji Kemper, wanted to follow up on our GDI discussion about Samsung's forthcoming 49-inch Odyssey monitor and linked us to an article from How To Geek called Your Gaming Monitor Might Be Too Big. Scott, this How To Geek article says that issues like lower pixel density in a large monitor, strained reactions because it's so big, ergonomic stress, hidden costs contribute to diminishing returns as screen size increases. For optimum gameplay comfort and budget balance, smaller monitors often prove more beneficial, says How To Geek. Can a monitor be too big?
I 100% agree with this. I had an experience that I will now share with you, which is this. I thought it would be cool to have a 46-inch 4K television as a computer monitor. I thought that would be the coolest way to play. I could play in 4K, HDR, all the fancy bells and whistles, and do it right from my computer. Here's what happened. I would miss all kinds of special peripheral UI elements. It would be like, I'm going, no, where's that supposed to be? I don't see it. Well, way over here, if I'd have just stood back and looked up to the left, I would have seen the tiny corner up here where some very valuable UI information is telling me exactly what I need and where I need to go. It became a problem. Like, I actually noticed it a lot where I was just forgetting to look at the rest of it. I became very, very, not tunnel vision, but very narrow focused on what was right in front of me, depending on the game. And it really threw me. So I went back to a 32 and it solved it. And my wife got a television in the bedroom. So now that's there. But it solved the problem. I don't have this problem anymore. And I'm pretty sure that if I even went smaller, I'd benefit more. 27 feels like the happy place for most gamers. But we do have this thing going where they get cheaper, they get bigger, and we all think we want bigger all the time. I think there is an upper limit on that with gaming monitors. So I completely agree about this. This article is correct as far as I'm concerned. Everyone's going to be a little bit different. You might just be fine with your gigantic screen, but it didn't work for me. It made me feel kind of dumb, if I'm honest. I didn't like it.
Well, we never feel dumb when you're on the show, Scott Johnson, because you bring the knowledge with a big OK. let folks know where they can keep up with the rest of your work.
Sounds great. Today, Nintendo did one of their directs and dropped a couple of big, previous to today, unheard of bombs we didn't know they were going to do. Do you want to know what those were? Do you want to hear us disseminate what those were, why they matter, and why the Switch might have one of the better falls for all the major consoles? Tune in to our podcast called Core. It's all about video games, and it happens every Thursday night. If you want the podcast, find it wherever you get podcasts. Just search for Core. And for all other details, check us out, both live or otherwise, at frogpants.com/core.
If you have just around $1 a week to spare, like, that's, you can't even get a cup of coffee for that. You can become a patron. And when you do, there's no downside. You're getting extra content. You're getting the Discord. You're getting access to all of us. And you get to stick around for the extended show, Good Day Internet, where we're going to talk about AI's role in the new Marvel series, Secret Invasion. It has ruffled a few feathers by trying to stay on brand with the theme of the show. How dare they?
But just a reminder, DTNS is live, and you can catch the show live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern. That's 2000 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We are back doing it all again tomorrow with Justin Robert Young joining us. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Well, folks, I think there was only one thing wrong with that show we did just now.
Doesn't have titles.
What would that be,
yet.
Tom?
Scott nailed it. Doesn't have a name. It needs a proper name for a perfect show like that. You know,
you bring the perfect puppy home from the store.
Right?
You need a name for the dog.
You don't want to call it Tom or Scott. No.
Well, you might.
No.
Yeah, I've met a couple dogs named Sarah, and it always makes me feel really weird.
it is kind of
weird. It is weird.
There's only one way to decide this issue, and that's with a vote. Showbot.tv/DTNS. Get over there and vote on the titles. You can even still submit them in the Twitch chat and the Discord. Just ask around if you don't know how to do it. They'll explain the old bang-ass command to you. Wow, the top vote getter right now is not one I want to say, but Sarah's going to take a look over your submissions. So please.
Well, I just voted and I made it different.
Now it's changed. Thank you, Sarah. Uh-huh. Get over there, showbot.tv/DTNS2. While I tell you about what's going on with Secret Invasion, dropped this morning at midnight. Disney Plus follows Nick Fury as he investigates the invasion by the Skrulls on Earth, which, if you followed Marvel, you might be like, well, wait a minute. But didn't they in the other movie? It's all explained. What's getting a lot of buzz today, though, is that the director and executive producer of the show, Ali Salim, told Polygon that Secret Invasion's intro sequence was designed by Method Studios. Now, that part could be news on its own, but it wouldn't cause buzz. Method Studios has worked on a lot of Marvel stuff. They worked on Moon Knight, Ms. Marvel, Loki. They even did the Apple Vision Pro commercials. Like, this is a well-known studios. But What is getting the attention is that Marvel's Method Studio collaboration involved some kind of unidentified machine-generated process. They won't tell us which one. They're just calling it AI, so we don't really know. But it obviously is some kind of large language model or DALL-E type of thing. Gizmodo had a post titled "Secret Invasion Uses AI for its opening credits, and the excuse is meaningless." Because they say the reason they did it was just because they thought that it did a really good job of capturing Skrull vibes. The VFX studios that work with Marvel are undoubtedly working overtime based on Marvel's output of content. There's no shortage of work there. But it does cause a little backlash in the community. Because everyone equates, oh, you're using AI, you're throwing someone out of a job. And then you do that in VFX, where literally VFX workers have been fighting for over unfair treatment, not being paid, not being properly credited, all of that stuff for a long time. And it's a recipe for people getting upset, which, you know, you don't need much this day and age to make people online upset. But here we go. Scott, do you think that using machine-generated imagery at the beginning of Secret Invasion is a bad thing or the worst thing that's ever happened?
So having seen the intro, and I love how you asked that, because it really does shut down the idea of any kind of middle ground, which I think there is miles of here. But,
Of course.
I'll get to the main point here, which is I've seen the intro. If you've seen the intro, then you know what we're talking about. There's a whole lot of green getting used. But anyway, it uses some techniques that I've actually said in the past out loud are my favorite applications of AI. Up till now, still images really don't do it for me. They're super easy to call out and tell what they are or see who they were involved with before they trained on whatever data, blah, blah, blah. And then I've seen some that are just bad. And of course, text-generated stuff's a whole different animal. But I've seen some video content that is really remarkable and compelling. And I don't know why I feel differently about it than I do some other aspects of AI, partly because I think the application is less about let's look like a Picasso painting and more like let's look like something you've never seen before. So maybe that helps. But that's kind of what they've done here. It's the first real commercial, big commercial application I've seen so far for this one aspect of AI art that I actually like. I think that there is some room here for criticism, but I also think there's some room here for acknowledging that the other methods to create what they did are not all that, well, how do I put this? Maybe they're less automated, but they're not that different in terms of what we would have computers help us do it. Like the work being done here, some dude with his pen can't do, okay? He's going to need a lot of assistance. If this was a curated manual, no machine learning involved process to make that intro, that's a ton of work, sure, but it's they'd have to use computers to help them do it. And so are we going to start calling tweening between animation points from this point to this point, where we had a computer automatically calculate the distance and how the animation should happen? Are we going to start calling that machine learning? Because we've been doing that for 40 years. Like, I worry that we're going to get a little too black and white with it and just cut it off for oh, it's AI assisted. Forget it. Even though the other way of doing it is very machine assisted.
If I may, it's not that we want to call tweening machine learning. It's that, is tweening bad? Is it taking away jobs? Is it lower the quality? No, it doesn't. Right?
No.
Whether it's machine learning or not, it's an automated process. And so it's automated processes can be good. I think the issue here is that they're not talking about what happened. And I don't think this was planned for him to talk about this. I think he just got excited about it and said, yeah, no, we don't want to hide it. It's great. If they gave you a behind the scenes video showing a bunch of visual effects artists plugging in this into some kind of generative model, seeing what they took out, seeing them change the prompts, like, well, that's a little bit too weird. Can you tell it to make it more ghostly? Tell it to make it more green, you know, and showing the work that went in it, then showing the polish. Because Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, but I doubt this thing came right out of a generative model and went right onto the TV show, right?
No way. Like, it didn't come out with credits on top of it and all set and done and in the exact sequence and timing they needed for the music and all of that.
And smoothing. And,
yeah, there's no possible way. Like, we're not... We may get there one day, and maybe that's everyone's biggest fear, is that these are just stepping stones to that process being fully automated. But right now, people are heavily involved in that final piece. That's actually true of most AI art that's getting used in commercial purposes.
Oh, sorry.
AARP, 50-year-old art and over. But no, when that stuff's getting used in commercial applications, I would argue 99 point something percent of that stuff is still people tweaking, reworking, changing, adding and polishing that stuff up, because this doesn't come out clean. It's like, you know what it's like? It's like 3D printing a little bit. It's like you got all these weird struts and stands and supports,
right?
And you got to file it down and all that's got to seam.
Do sanding and painting and
it's a lot like that. Now, you know, obviously 3D printing is a lot more human involved, but still we have all of these assists. The question is, when are the assists doing everything? And I don't think they're doing that yet. I think we're just in very early stages of it. And I've been on this show before criticizing, you know, the ethics around AI art in general. I don't know that this falls into that category. Like, maybe it does ultimately, because it had to train on some data. What data? I don't know. It looks like data from Marvel to me. Like a data they own. So it's not like they
that would be interesting to know too, because again, I think we get a little bent out of shape, and I've talked about it on the show before about it was trained on my data, and it's like, well, it turned a bunch of zeros and ones into a pattern based on your data. Your data isn't in there. It's not sitting there looking at your picture and copying it. It's just, but anyway, leaving that aside before I go down that rabbit hole, it would be really cool to know if Marvel was like, actually this particular model was trained only on Marvel Comics, all the Marvel comics, all the movies, all the TV shows, and we asked it, like, show us the scrolls opening in the style of, and it was able to do that. That'd be cool to know. I would love to know all about this stuff. They're not talking though.
Maybe if they, you know what, your initial point about them not opening up about it is kind of the key problem here. It's not, it's great that they're confident about it, or that they're cool with it going, oh, you know, yeah, we totally did. They're not hiding it, but they're not expounding on it. And I think given the circumstances around the controversies of AI and machine learning, it would really behoove them to talk to us about it. To those, you're not going to satisfy the ones that are just absolutely opposed to this from the ground up. You're never going to get to them. But maybe the discussing the process would actually help us advance our thinking on all this.
Yeah, I wonder if this is a Method Studios issue, because now I'm looking at this Polygon story a little closer again. And Salim is talking to Polygon. And he's like, we reached out to the AI vendors. That was part of it. It just came right out of the shape-shifting scroll world of identity. You know, who did this? Who is this? He's like, this is just so cool. And then he says he doesn't really understand how the artificial intelligence works, but was fascinated with the ways in which it could translate the sense of foreboding he wanted from the series. We would talk to them about ideas and themes and words, and then the computer would go off and do something. And then we could change it a little bit by using words, and it would change. He's talking about prompt engineering. Mm-hmm. He was doing prompt engineering. He just didn't know that's what he was doing. Method Studios did not respond to Polygon's request for comment about how it designed the sequence. So it seems like Salim is really like, yeah, let me tell you about this. This is really fun. Here's what I did. I don't really know the tech. And then he goes to Method Studios and they're like, we have Apple as a client, so we don't talk to anyone.
Well, I mean, and listen, you know, I'm not going to speak for, you know, all directors, but having been a, you know, somebody who sits in an editing room with somebody who knows a lot about, you know, how to edit and, I kind of go like, here's what I want to achieve. And they go, say no more, go to lunch, get away from me. I come back later and I'm like, you're a genius.
Yeah. Right.
So I feel like this is not unlike that feeling of like, it just worked and we liked it, so we kept it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's my point exactly, is that I don't think Salim should be expected to know how the AI works. But when Polygon went and was like, cool, he seems really excited about this, let's find out how it worked, they got nothing. They got nothing in response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like I say, I think there's just a lot of, I don't even want to call it gray area because it isn't gray. There's just a lot of space between this is garbage and this is great. There's a lot of space for discussion. And I wish we were less polarized on it, even though I may have come off as polarized about, you know, hand-drawn stuff. But that was mostly about the ethics that we didn't really have in place yet about what who we're training on and how. And, you know, that's still up in the air. But in the case of this particular use case, there's two things missing: them being open about how they do their stuff. And maybe they won't ever be because they consider it, you know, corporate secrets that everyone else will steal. And you, I don't know why they're being tight-lipped about it. Maybe the Apple connection is that reason. But I think them being more open about it, and as these tools get more democratized, people are going to start making this sort of stuff on their own and even exceeding what Hollywood does in some cases. That's already been happening with deepfakes and stuff. Then the conversation becomes a little bit more in the sunlight because, yeah. Well, we know how this is made because this is how this is done. And, you know, I feel like that's important. The more we see it, the better we're going to be able to make opinions about this. And I don't want to seem wishy-washy on it. I just, man, I think that intro is really rad. But part of me knows that part of me knows it's rad because it's the video generated stuff, this morphy weird thing that is kind of a style of its own. I've seen it in other stuff. This intro is a bit like it, but you'll see these things where someone will just go, "Hey machine, go nuts with these 8 prompts." And then it does stuff, as far as I can tell, no human could do, certainly in the time frame given. It's impossible not to be intrigued by that. We at least have to like look at it, you know? We have to explore this. And I want the ethics to be upfront about it. We're just not there yet. And in the meantime, you're going to have cases like this pop up where they're big and notable and everybody's going to lose their mind. But hopefully discussions like this can happen. And, yeah. You know,
and it's worth pointing out again that visual effects artists, not just at Marvel, but across the industry, historically not treated the best, not paid properly, not given proper credit. So I get why there's a sensitivity around this in particular. Right. And I think that's worth paying attention to and crediting. But on the other hand, I think Scott, you even have gone through this process I'm about to describe, which is with everything, the public in general tends to resist something new that it perceives as not being under its control until it begins to benefit from it directly. And then it changes its mind.
Right.
Copyright is a great example of that. Copyright in the 2000s was something that only big studios, kept, and the rhetoric of the general populace was copyright should just be eliminated, which I think would be taking it too far. But it was very much like copyright is evil and it's only used by bad people. Today, I have been fascinated to watch as creators and influencers start to embrace copyright laws and use them and say like, well, you shouldn't copy my thing to each other as they start to learn the benefits of it for them. I'll leave where copyright law should actually be, in my opinion, for another day. But it's been an interesting change of attitude to watch of like, everything should be free and you should be able to copy anything when it didn't matter to like, well, but you shouldn't copy my stuff when it started to become a reality in places like YouTube and TikTok.
Yeah. Right? Some of the same people who complained or had those feelings about copyright on those early days are the same people now that have thousands of videos on their very successful channels full of content they would like to have credited to them only. Like it really does change the discussion when it's you, and it doesn't mean there isn't room for improvement or tweak or whatever. There's always room, but that is often the way this works, right? We just don't, yeah. We see the world differently until we see it differently. And
my analogy here is that people probably are more resistant to these generative tools until they start to use them. And when they start to use them and benefit them, they start to say, well, they can be abused, but they're good for this. And I feel like that's a process that you've gone through, which is like, hold on, they're using my work. I don't like that, which totally fair. But then as you started to experiment with them, to your credit, you didn't just like, you know, try to burn the village. You know, you were like, well, let me try these things. You started to realize, this is how they're abused, but this is how they can be used well for me as an artist.
Yeah, it turns out there's nuance to almost every big issue like this, and this is definitely one of those. I had a very specific use case for AI the other day that was eye-opening, and this is going to sound dumb to some people because this is base-level stuff, but I was just messing around with show notes. I have these big show notes for certain shows, like Core Head, amazing list of stuff we talk about every week. And we generate all that manually. We're writing all our own headlines and like looking for what stories we're going to cover and all of that, putting links in the doc and everything else. And at the end of it, I went, man, my least favorite thing when I post these shows is consolidating all that and writing up the dumb paragraph of what we talked about. And even then, it's not great because I'm not including the right links all the time. Like, it's just kind of a mess. So I copied all of that out in just straight out of Google Sheets, by the way. So just jumble of text, not all formatted right because it's out of a spreadsheet, into ChatGPT, the web version. And I just said, can you take this and put it in about a 500-character summation and then give me inline links for anything that seems notable? Just that was the prompt.
Uh-huh.
I put it in there. 2 seconds later, it had a perfect paragraph that summarized the show perfectly. And anything that had like a capitalization or kind of a major thing like Capcom or some other company name was now linked to Capcom.com or a Wikipedia article about the game itself or whatever. And I actually didn't have to change it. Normally you got to go in there and tweak and polish like we've been talking about. But it just made my show notes with working links in seconds. How can I not see that as a beneficial tool? It's impossible not to see that as not as as a tool I wouldn't want to take advantage of. And you might say, well, Scott, if you currently employed somebody whose job it was to just do show notes, which is possible, an independent podcaster has someone doing that and is getting paid for it, would you need to pay them anymore? And the answer is probably no. See, I get the downsides.
Here's the question, though. If you had a really good relationship with that person and they were spending most of their time doing show notes, but now you didn't have to have them do show notes, would you be like, oh, now I can have them do this other thing?
Yeah, that's what I would do.
And not because it was the right thing to do, but even selfishly, like I always wanted someone to do this for me, but I never could afford it. Now you could.
Yeah. And that person is maybe better suited to stuff that's less mundane. Let's let the computer do this boring stuff. And, you know, they've been through enough of that. Let's put them on this other thing that's a lot more rewarding for them. Like, I'm not saying this is possible in every single case. I'm just saying there's so much more to this, all of this stuff, than just AI sucks or AI is great. There's just so much in the middle. Like anything else, like we just forget that this is like any other big advancement. When the internet became a thing we all accessed with the World Wide Web in 94, it didn't go from everything is great to everything sucks. It went from, if this is a big nuanced mess, we're going to figure it out. What are the applications? How's it going to work? How's this going to do anything? And I think it's a disingenuous for us to hop on social media and complain about technology when we wouldn't have the platform to complain about it on without the advancement of technology. I just feel like we're being so obtuse when we do that. And I am trying, I'm not saying everybody, I am personally trying not to do that as much where I can. So
you do it on Mastodon instead of Twitter. I know.
Oh yeah. Just go to Mastodon and just rip the whole place a new one.
If anything, it's the opposite, right?
my hide to my Jekyll is over there for sure. But no, that's not true. You've been posting
on Twitter a lot lately.
Yeah, the last few days, for whatever reason, I got on a tear. And I think part of it was I was just like, I don't feel like posting this everywhere. You know what I need? I need Trillion for social media again. I need something that's just like post it and it goes everywhere and I'm done. That's what I need. So instead I default to, well, where are most of the listeners at, or where are most of these followers? Mm-hmm. Okay, they're here. I'll just post it here, I guess.
It's why the beautiful promise of decentralization, right, is that there won't be one company, but there'll be one platform. So you don't have to post it multiple places, like email. We don't have to have a different email for every situation. We have email and it all works. Mm-hmm. But messaging, we don't have a single platform protocol that everybody agrees on. So now you have to remember, like, wait, did I message them on Discord or was it WhatsApp or was it SMS or, you know, yeah.
Right. And it feels like truly embracing the federated way would provide opportunities for a central way to put it everywhere. So if you had people that wanted to be in one place, great. This new Meta Threads thing, great. But I don't want to go there separately and log in special and do it separate and then go paste it somewhere else. Now, oh, shoot, I forgot the image. Where's the image? Oh, I pasted it.
Oh, so wait, this one has a different character count. Now I have to like tweak it a little to make it fit.
That's starting to be a real headache, I think. Mm-hmm. It may be limited, you know, people aren't. People don't love to post everywhere as it is, but people like us do. We're trying to get our stuff everywhere. So
I think Harjimano cracked it. Use the AI to develop your own Trillion.
Ding.
Just ask ChatGPT to create one for you.
Hey, create Trillion, but for social networks. Let's see what happens.
Have you tried it?
No, I'm going to try right now. I really am. Let's see what. Scott, I keep calling her she, but I don't know why I do that.
Scott may be maybe starting the thing that makes him a millionaire right this minute. You may be watching this.
OpenAI will demand their cut. That's what I'm worried about.
Well, Sarah and I will, because we were here.
Yeah, it was your idea. I have to give you royalties.
Harjimano actually deserves the biggest cut.
A trillion.
Harjimano said they also tried it and it recommended Python.
Oh, really? We're posting on multiple social networks. I'm going to try this. Networks at once.
At once.
Let's see what he says. ChatGPT is thinking now. It says, as an AI language model, I can provide you with guidance on how to create a tool to post on these things.
All right.
So it's all stuff like define your requirements, research APIs, obtain those keys. Yeah. It's like
maybe you need to go to GitHub and use Microsoft Copilot.
There you go. Done. We've solved the entire thing.
Yes, Amos.
Amos's picture went.
I know. I saw that too.
I just want to tell people that if they are interested in seeing all kinds of things in a single place, John Jagger's Frog Wrestling Championship is tonight.
Yeah, it is. So my co-host on Core, John Jagger, does this thing called Frog Wrestling. Tom Merritt's in it. He plays. His character is called
Moderator.
The moderator.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's awesome. He's doing Women's League tonight now too. So all the women of Frog Pants are getting repped. The game he's using this for, they don't allow the men's league and the women's league to compete. So you have to have separate stuff. So it's kind of a bummer, but it's so great. You guys, if you're not seeing this, it is so great. Even if you don't like wrestling, all of these people, these personalities around our community and everything else, it is some of the funniest, most entertaining, amazing stuff.
I just dropped a link to his Twitter post in the chat, and it has a link to his YouTube channel, 4:30 p.m. Pacific today.
Good deal. That's awesome.
And he creates a narrative around it, and he's not actually playing the game. He's just letting the game's AI do all the fights, and he just creates the narrative. He's just the announcer, and it's amazing. It's so fun to watch.
He told me he's done 90 hours on that game, if he looks on Steam. He's played 0 hours of it, though. It's all AI matches. He just created characters, and it's got a very in-depth creator. And then you just let these characters fight.
That's how I used to do our computer baseball league in the 80s. Mm. We used Micro League Baseball, and we'd assign computer managers to both teams.
That's great.
And then we just watch.
And all the contestants are based on Frog Pants personalities. Scott, John, and Bo, of course, from the core crew. Then you got Tom. You got several others from different Brian shows Ibbett. In the Frog Pants universe. And
Ibbett in his big dumb red or blue suit.
George Johnson. Yep.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's so good. And now he's got my daughter, my wife, Kristen from. Married to Kyle Ferguson. She's in there. Like all these just amazing people with these ridiculous personas. It's so much fun. And for some reason, I'm like big time belt holder right now. I don't know what I'm doing. I haven't done anything. I'm winning all the matches.
Too much longer, Scott. It's up for grabs tonight.
Tonight might be a problem. But he gave me jorts, and I'm pretty sure it's my lucky jorts that I wear when I wrestle.
That must be it. Must be the jorts. So, as your apparel campaign. Goes.
It must be the jorts is my slogan.
So I bring that up because if you want to see a bunch of people in one place, that's a great place to simulate doing it, and also the AI aspect of it that the AI is there and is doing its thing, but John's actually creating the narrative and spelling out what's going on and where, and it's just amazing. It's really good.
A thing he couldn't have done in the past, you know.
Thank you, Amos, for passing that along. And thank you, everyone, for supporting the show. Patreon.com/DTNS. Bunch of people giving us raises, and we really appreciate it. It's going to have to count toward the Molly thing. We'll figure out how to make that work. But thanks to Johnny Homecoming, DJ George 3, George and Russell and Frank and Sergey, all gave. Sarah, did you see how many raises we got?
Quite a few.
Yeah. It's amazing. Thank you to every single one of you who
indeed new patrons and existing patrons alike. Thanks for putting in the good work.
And thanks to the folks who support us on Twitch, making the video possible. We got some bits from Rabbit41, PC Milesy, and Zoe Brings Bacon, and resubscribes from Zoe Brings Bacon at Tier 1. Oh, I'm sorry, not a resubscribe. Zoe gifted a Tier 1 subscription to Monkey Bananas. Aw, that was nice of you, Zoe.
He's awesome, and she is too. That's
hey,
great.
Two awesome people helping each other out. Willie Scott, W. Scott S. 1, subscribed for the 44th month, 38 minutes ago. Thank you, W. Scott S. 1. And that is going to wrap up Good Day Internet. Thanks, everybody, for being with us. We are back tomorrow. I promise, even though Sarah walked off, she's going to be back tomorrow. So don't.
Didn't walk off.
Don't worry about it. Well, they'll see you. The camera doesn't go away from you. Till tomorrow, everybody, have a good day.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.